The Fan on Demand. Nobody does it better. This is Hockey Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Presented by Lexus on the Park, it is Hockey Central. Hockey fans, thank you for making this show possible. Without you, we'd be speaking to a very small audience. Darren Millard on this Friday, along with...
How'd your motivational speaking course go yesterday? What is that? We got non-hockey fans, too. People that like us, the show, to give them the skinny in the Stanley Cup playoffs, right? That's where peripheral hockey fans tune in.
You're a hockey fan.
No, you're not. You're the diehard hockey fans. Then there's people that just watch the playoffs and get interested. And how could you not get interested in this?
Darren Millard, along with Gord Stellick, will be leaving the program early today due to a prior commitment that just came up. We are going to chat with Doug McClain on the New York Ranger Montreal Canadiens series, which is 2-1 in favor of the Rangers in a series in which the road team has won all three games. That's bizarre. And Derek Laxdal ahead of tonight's MasterCard Memorial Cup semifinal game. The Oil Kings in the tournament for the second time in 3 years, trying to get to the final where Guelph awaits. They played a thriller in the round robin that went to double overtime. So those two guys coming up. It is an off night in the Stanley Cup playoffs. So the Memorial Cup has the spotlight to themselves and everybody taking a chance to just digest what happened at Madison Square Garden last night. How surprised are you that Montreal not only won, but scored three goals?
Well, the first thing is Montreal obviously had a big response to the New York Rangers. What I love the passion. There's now some anger, some dislike in this series, which is going to be making it more colorful for all of us to watch. So I'm not surprised that they scored goals. I mean, they have some talent up front. I'm surprised that they kept them out of the net, actually. Tokarski, we talked a couple days ago. I wasn't a fan of that move. He played terrific, and he's making me a believer.
I'm surprised about a lot of things in this series. First of all, I'm watching the New York Rangers last night, and they are the Flying Frenchmen of earlier years. It's Guy Lafleur. So they're skating like the Montreal Canadiens of the 1970s. I mean, they get a 2-on-1 in the first minute and a half, you know, just that kind of thing. So I was surprised. I've been really surprised by the Rangers' play. So then you get about five different storylines in the first period of play, and I'm thinking, the Rangers are going to win this about 8-1. And then the way Tokarski's playing, like you said, Brad, I started thinking, okay, you know, we've watched games at every level that you kind of sit and smile. There's a lot of scouts that know how a game's going to turn. You go, Montreal has no business winning this game, and they're going to win this game. Even when they blow it in the waning seconds of regulation time, they had no business winning it, but I got to a point where when the Rangers had not seized the moment that I thought it was Montreal's.
So is there any part of you based on last night's result that makes you believe Montreal can still win this series? Or was that a fluky couple of bounces for Montreal?
Well, we write off teams too quickly. I still think they can't.
I agree.
You know, we always say, you know, geez, look at the San Jose Sharks and LA Kings. So we're like fans. It's a knee-jerk reaction,
now,
right?
I'll preface that question with Montreal hasn't played a good game yet.
No, so that's why they
were better in game two than they were in one and three. But they still haven't played a good game.
I'll tell you what they can do. Yes, to answer your question, can they still win? Of course. The goaltender getting his confidence is huge. At the end of the day, as much as the New York Rangers look like the old Flying Frenchmen in Montreal, they're still the New York Rangers, okay? Mm-hmm. They're still the New York Rangers. So that's a really run-of-the-mill team during the regular season. And Therrien, I mean, Danny Briere out there again for a key goal. Galchenyuk coming back in the lineup. I was comparing it to Pat Burns in 1993 with the Leafs in that big overtime games. Mike Foligno gets a big goal in Game 5 against Detroit. Nikolai Borshevsky gets a big goal in Game 7. They weren't really top three-line players. You know what I mean? Just this knack of getting the right guy out at the right time. And Therrien has really had that this playoff.
Chat with Doug McClain about that in a little bit, because Therrien's had the real insight to his team to be able to put the guys together at the right time. Briere, Vanek. Vanek didn't play a ton, but they came up with a goal. What do you think about Montreal's chances now?
They certainly have a chance. They're going to have to win in Madison Square Garden Game 4. I think Game 4, for me, is always the most pivotal game of a series. Obviously, if it gets to Game 7, it's a pick 'em. But Game 4, right now, the New York Rangers recognize an opportunity. They go up 3-1. They have a couple cracks at winning it. Game 4 is huge. The New York Rangers are going to seize the moment at home. But if Montreal can somehow thwart that plan, I think the one thing that the New York Rangers do better than the other teams that they've played is they're disciplined. They don't take as many unnecessary penalties, which actually fuels Montreal's game. So I just know when we, in the Stanley Cup final, we played against Ottawa, we won the first two games like New York did, although we did it on the road. We lost game three, and we recognize that that game four, if you lose that one, it all of a sudden the momentum has completely shifted.
Was that the Albertson, I think it's huge, shooting the puck at Niedermeyer game?
Yeah, he shot it and hit Scotty there late in the second period, which actually fueled our team. And Scott Niedermeyer, think of all the energy and excitement and emotion. He settled us down with one of the greatest speeches in our locker room. It was a terrific
moment. When was that?
Between the second and third period.
Oh, really?
You know, because we were all angry. And, you know, you lose a little bit of focus. That now we're focusing on Daniel Alfredson. And Scotty basically, you know, and he never swears. He never raises his voice. His speech in the room was terrific.
Okay, leaving the profanity out, if he did use any, give us the cold notes of what he would have said, if you can remember.
Basically, we've got these guys exactly where we want them. They've lost their composure. Their captain has done something out of character. And guys, right now, we know they're the wounded team, and we have to pounce on. We have to win game, you know, or the third period, game four. We have to win. And enough of your, you know the word I'm using.
Bull something, I think.
Around the locker room, guys, focus.
Talking about getting Alfredson.
Yeah, because we were angry at that moment. And he said, you know, enough's enough in this locker room, whatever. And then you could hear a pin drop in the rest of the intermission. It was a terrific moment, I'm telling you. It was one of those most profound moments of that 2.5 month run for me was Scotty talking.
And he did it early in the intermission and then let everybody.
Yeah, it was pretty much, he came in and he was fired up.
Some people would wait until you go right back out.
No. As soon as we came in, he was so animated and out of character. But that's what captains do. They seize that moment, and you don't have to say a lot, but you know, he leads by example as a player for sure. But when he spoke in the locker room, and certainly when he raised his voice and you know, spoke the way he did, because it's out of his character, we all sat back and listened and took note.
Well, it's kind of like the old E.F. Hutton commercial. If he's talking, you listen. And you're right. He's the right guy to do it. The other part I would like is just watching. I think if I'm Ottawa going, great, he's got them running around all pissed at Alfredson, right? Because you want to stick up for Niedermeyer, and the focus is on Daniel Alfredson, and that's a great thing. Niedermeyer just, hey, I'm okay. You don't need to do it. Let's get back to our game. Otherwise, Alfredson wins if he throws you off the game.
Without a doubt. And Scotty was the only guy in our locker room that had a Stanley Cup, and he had three of them. And then the mission became, you know, win it with his brother Robbie. And, you know, every other guy had their own reasons to why they wanted to win. But the Niedermeyer brothers, Scott in particular, you know, led the way.
Before we leave this conversation, chatting about the Scott Niedermeyer speech in the Stanley Cup final in which the Anaheim Ducks defeated the Ottawa Senators, how often during the course of that season or that playoff run would Niedermeyer take the stage and speak to you guys?
I got traded at the trade deadline, so I got there very late. They had a really good start to the season. When I got there, they put me in the corner of the locker room with Ilya Brizgalov on one side.
I didn't know that.
And Scotty Niedermeyer to my left. And
boy, because,
No, and the reason why, it was funny, the guys were like, listen, it was the quietest corner in the locker room. Mm-hmm. You know, these guys didn't speak. And when Briz spoke, you didn't really understand where he was going with it anyways. But Scotty was so quiet. They put me in there and, you know, to raise the energy, I guess, in the corner of the room. And Scotty, honestly, I'm sure I made his ears bleed. Yeah, he was probably sick.
But how often would he address the team?
You know what?
Often?
Not often.
Or no?
Not often. Okay. No, not often. And he didn't have to say anything.
Was it, less than other teams and that you played on where captains would speak?
I would say the other guy, like Scott, was Joe Sakic. Joe spoke a little bit more than Scotty would, but he's definitely the quietest captain I played for.
And who was the most vocal captain?
Probably Mark Messier, who used to, you know, he'd sit in his little pulpit there and he taught us a lot in Vancouver. I know people in Vancouver don't like Mark Messier or certainly don't like his time, the 3 years that he had there. But for all those players, Marcus Naslin, Bertuzzi, and down the line through our locker room, he made a big difference.
So a captain is that important to a team?
A leader is that important. So I don't believe just because you have a C, you're bestowed that honor and everybody's going to sit back and respect you. I mean, everybody's watching you. You have to do things right every time, all the time. You can't just do it, you know, half-assed and become a great leader. So, and guys lead in different ways. I think there's a lot of great leaders that are captains, that are fourth line players or seventh defensemen that rally the group and team. So I think it's very important to have leaders. Yeah.
Do you think it's important to have a captain? Some teams don't.
I don't think a captain necessarily makes a difference. I think in a lot of markets, you have to have that identity. It sells, you're making money, and it gives a face to the franchise. But I don't believe a captain, for instance, in Buffalo, they named Ryan Miller captain at one time, Roberto Luongo in Vancouver as well. Those two guys, probably the most vocal that could actually, you know, answer the questions that the reporters were asking. But they're goaltenders. Let them be selfish. Let them think most about themselves in their game, and they're going to help the team more than wearing a C and worrying about, you know, everyone else in the locker room.
Boy, the worst thing is to make the wrong guy captain. It really is. To give the wrong guy this, just like anywhere, you know, give someone a position of authority outside or whatever, a voice, who's the wrong voice.
Can that hurt you? Can that hurt you as a team? Having a guy as captain who's not the right?
Absolutely. You know,
I'm trying to figure out how important that captain.
I use a different word, but crap runs downhill. Mm-hmm. And it all starts at the top. It's all about the leadership at the top and the watershed of that. And when you see your captain or your leader, you know, that's bestowed this honor, making mistake after mistake or not buying into the team concept, not listening to the coach's plan that we worked on for an hour and a half yesterday at practice, and goes out and does his own thing, all of a sudden that erodes the fabric of your hockey team for sure.
Well, you know, I think the next part is the leadership group, that it's too much about the one guy, but yeah, you've got to have that core. I mean, we're talking about in Toronto, mm-hmm. Dion Phaneuf, about the C. And I just look
at Jason Spezza in Ottawa.
What do I? But the group here in Toronto, and you know, like Kessel doesn't want to be. He is what he is, right? So then, where do you get the core? I mean, David Bolin. That's one of the things that bothered him. He comes from a Stanley Cup winning team in Chicago, and there was a culture, and so Phaneuf gets unfairly, singularly blamed for it. Where you got to have a couple of guys, you really do.
But you look at the captains on the four teams that are remaining in the chase for the Stanley Cup, and they're very different. Where their roles are and where they're slotted on their teams.
Absolutely.
One guy's a free agent, Gianta.
But they all have a supporting cast, though. I mean, they all have a supporting cast of strong leaders.
I'm looking at Gianta as won a Stanley Cup. This guy, and the way he prepares himself, he's an older player, and he's still flying out there. He's a guy that people listen to. You look at Jonathan Toews, he doesn't make mistakes, and obviously he's a clutch player, and he's so talented, but if you're David Bolin or if you're Andrew Shaw or if you're Ben Eager a few years back, you jump on his back and you do the right things that the coaches and the team has planned for.
Dustin Brown.
And Dustin Brown's the same way. Dustin Brown's a guy that people may not like. You know, personality, whatever that is, that's the rumor. But Dustin Brown shows up every day. Even a guy playing against Dustin Brown, he did the right things. He'd finish you when he could. He was almost too physical because he'd hurt guys because he was that strong and fast and could do that. But this guy plays the same way every day, the consistency. And that, if he's your leader, honestly, that's infectious to the group.
Darren Millard along with Gord Stellick and Brad May, Hockey Central, presented by Lexus in the Park. Doug McLean will stop by in just a moment. Montreal gets back into the series against the New York Rangers last night on a goal off the face of Alex Galchenyuk. But part of that game included two incidents. One, Daniel Carcillo and the chicken wing, whatever you want to call it, against linesman, and Brandon Prust. What did you think, Gordy, about the Prust hit? There is a hearing with player safety department.
Yeah, you know what? And let's do the Carcillo thing second, because I want to go into a little bit of a longer expose about that. I want to get Brad's point of view on Prust from a player's point of view, but also what's bothered me about it so much so my voice actually cracked there is that, you know, whether it was the Matt Cook situation or the Rafi Torres situation, here you had substantial suspensions and there was no penalty on the play. So last night, I don't view it as an egregious play by Prust. Interesting, it's his old team as well. But why does four pair of eyes never call anything? Like, that was a five-minute hit to me. So you got four pairs of eyes, and that would diffuse a lot of things on the ice that way. So that's what I thought is a minimum. I don't think he'll get the book thrown at him, maybe a game or two, but I'm curious about it. It was an interesting dynamic because you've been on every side of that, Brad.
It's a five-minute hit if Stepan is hurt and leaves the game. Stepan stayed in the game.
He left the game.
He left the game for
he was hurt down on the ice. He left the game.
Okay.
At that point, he's hurt.
I actually, there's no question it was a late hit. But what is a late hit? We've all heard this.
It's not an early hit.
It's one steamboat.
Well.
One steamboat. And that was one steamboat for the speed that they're traveling at. step at least. In many ways. I got knocked out one night in Vancouver, Matt Sundin. I woke up in a CAT scan machine in the hospital. And honestly, if I could actually weigh in on that, it was my fault because I turned to the left when Matt's was back checking and I ran into him. Now, this isn't necessarily the same hit or the same story.
No, it wasn't.
But the player that just made the play has to be aware of the players that are around him.
No, but three or so years ago, it changed that it's incumbent upon the hitter to be responsible what he does to the hit team.
And it was not a headshot. It was to the chest. Well, principal point of contact.
The old principal
point. I slowed it down.
Interference was the phrase
without a doubt, it was.
Here's Doug McLean walking through Central Park. Doug, just your reaction to the fact that Prest now has a hearing because of the hit. Is Doug there?
It's the hit of the day. It's the talk of the league, and it's been there for a couple of years. And was it a blindside? I'm not quite sure. Was it a hit to the head? No, it caught the chest and then went to the head. And it was late. So, you know what? I mean, do you like it? No, you don't like it. But, you know, it doesn't surprise me if he gets a game here. I mean, I think the fact that it was late, and I don't know if it was one steamboat, two, or three steamboats. It depends how fast you say three steamboats. When the quarterback used to say three, I'd get there real fast, you know? So I don't know how slow those steamboats are, but it was a late hit. And you know what? Prust gave them energy. So you don't like it, but if I'm Montreal, I'm saying, you know, I might take a one game because I thought Prust gave them some energy when they were pretty flat coming into this game.
Doug McLean walking through Central Park as the New York Rangers fall at home again.
Jogging. Let's say I'm jogging.
You're not out of breath.
Are you in one of those rickshaw chariot things?
Or a carriage? Are you in a carriage?
I just passed two horse and buggies. I passed them, so that's how quick I'm going.
what's the problem with the New York Rangers at home? They were 20 wins, 17 losses, and four others during the regular season, so that's not overwhelming. And they're 4-4 during this playoff.
Well, look, you watch the game and you say, okay, just a minute. The shots at one point were 32-12 for New York. I thought they blew it early on when they had point-blank chances on Tarkowski and they missed the net. They fanned on them. He wasn't sharp early on. He was looking behind him. He had bad rebound control. All of a sudden, he gets confidence or whatever the case may be, and he has a heck of a third period where he actually made four or five great saves, especially on St. Louis. And Nash finally came alive in the third period and had a real strong third period. But the kid battled like crazy. So I don't know if it's a problem at home. I don't know if they're a little relaxed. But you know, we're dead in the water, guys, at the morning skate. I mean, I'm talking to a couple of their coaches, and it's like, hey, we got to win tonight or the boys are booking Aruba, Bahamas, Barbados. The wives are on checking flights. We need a win. So Montreal hung around, didn't play a great game, but hung around long enough to get a win.
A strange one that the Rangers couldn't go for the juggler. And I mean, early on, PK had nothing in the gas. There was that kind of 2-on-1 early in the first 2 minutes. And after that, I thought it was going to be like a 6-1 game. So I'm wondering now, we're talking about earlier, if I'm Montreal, I'm thrilled to be down 2-1. What do you think their chances are of winning this thing?
Well, you know what? Gallagher is their best forward by a country mile. I've seen every game live since the playoffs started. He has been their go-to guy up front. I mean, this kid battled like, reminded me of a Brad May with the Niagara Falls Juniors, you know, when he was a first-round pick. The way this guy went to the paint and battled. But you know what? I think PK was not very good. PK hasn't been very good in this series yet. He was a star of the first two series. He's had a little bit of trouble getting on line. He looks like he's fighting a little confidence, which is hard to believe. I coughed up a couple. He got a chat on the bench. I think for them to win, look, I think it's going to be tough. I'm excited for the kid in goal. I'm not getting too excited yet. I saw the Gibson thing blow up in their face in Game 7. I'm not getting too excited yet. I hope the kid can hang in there. I'd love to see it be extended, but I still think the Rangers are a better team right now.
Hey, Doug, when you talk about the Rangers and you make that comment about being the better team, last night, did you see...
Are either of them any good?
Well, I don't believe...
I'm thinking, seriously, who would have ever believed this?
Doug, Ryan McDonagh, the way he plays, he played almost 24 minutes last night. He's a leader on their back end. Did you see the speed that he had from in front of the net and chased down Gallagher at the, you know, inside the offensive blue line?
I would have put money that Gallagher was gone on that play. And for him to catch him and make a clean play on it where he poked it away. It was like so casual, so calm. He's a horse on the back end. And, you know, you think about trades, and yet we all wish we had trades back in our careers, but that's one that just must eat away because he has become one of the best defensemen in the NHL. And that big three on the Ranger blue line, Henn Lundqvist, is probably the difference, should be the difference in this series, but we'll see. But yeah, you're right, Brad. He has become a horse back there.
Darren Millard, Gord Stellick, Brad May on Hockey Central, presented by Lexus in the Park, chatting with the jogging, brisk walking, Doug McLean to Central Park. Mike Therrien's done a great job in these playoffs, and everything, almost everything he does seems to work out to a certain point, and that includes Thomas Vanek on the fourth line, where he puts him in a position, and Daniel Briere ends up scoring.
Yeah.
He didn't play a lot,
so
but...
upset. No, and they're so disappointed. I talked to a couple of people yesterday, and some people are around the team are saying, I wish somebody would grab, one of the players would grab him in the dressing room and give him a shakedown to get him off the schneid. I mean, it's just the lack of effort that's ticking them off, the bummy checks that he loves to throw, and you know, he just looks a little disinterested, and yet he makes the pass to Briere, and that's what he does. You hang with, like people talk about scratching him. There's no way you're scratching him because he almost deflected a couple in on the power play. He's got potential to score, so you can't ever scratch a guy. Bump him down. Like, seriously, is it a disgrace to play with Briere the way, when you look at his playoff numbers, and this guy just won't go away at playoff time. I got to give him big-time credit, Briere, for, you know, he's been a scratch in the playoffs, and yet he just continues to battle. So they're ticked off at Vanek. They don't know what to make of it, but you know,
but he makes the right move. He's not giving him ice time where it's a waste.
No, exactly. And yet you put him with a Briere. You know, he's got the fourth line. Wasn't last night. Was for, you know, when you compare them to, I guess, the day or an A line. But Eller was invisible last night. His line was not very good. So I don't know if it really was the fourth line. But you know what? This is a team, and talking to Montreal, they give up 10 to 12 grade A scoring chances every game from game one to game 82, not against Tampa, but against us. This is a team that gives up unbelievably quality scoring chances, and the coaches shake their heads when they watch the video after, and they think, wow, Price got us another point. Price did this, Price did that. Timely scoring. But now it's going to be interesting. They've got to cut. I don't know how they cut down the scoring chances because the Rangers still had a ton last night, guys.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned earlier kind of, you know, saying, boy, are either really a good team? And certainly they're both surprise teams to make it to the Eastern Conference Final. And I'm wondering, when you go back to your Florida Panther team, for example, when you catch lightning in a bottle and you get further than most people expected in a playoff, what are the keys at that particular point to make the most out of the ride?
Well, there's no doubt in my mind. There's no doubt in my mind it's coaching.
Well, I'm not talking about back then. I'm talking about now.
Okay. You know what? You get the confidence just takes off. And especially, you know, the Tampa series, first of all, not a great confidence builder, except you won it four straight. So that gives you the boost. And then there's questions about the goal. But when you beat out the Bruins, who are the President Trophy champions, you're taking a lot out of that series. The fact you won it, but the fact the way you won it, you had to battle back. You had to come back in some games. I think they're a confident group right now, but I mean, I don't see them. I mean, it's bizarre when you see where they are. And then I chuckle and I see Mario Lemieux say, well, you know, you look at the Montreal Canadiens, the way they play, that's how we have to play. And I'm thinking, Mario, be careful what you hope for, unless you're going to get Price.
Doug McLean with us on Hockey Central, presented by Lexus on the Park. What do you think happens in game four then?
You know what? I hope I'm wrong, but I think the Rangers go up 3-1. I think they feel they let one slip away badly last night. You knew when they pulled the goalie with a minute 30 and they had about five scoring chances in that stretch that they probably were going to get one. I was excited to be able to stay and watch an overtime at MSG instead of going down to Fifth Avenue. And, you know, but anyway, it was exciting. And, I think the Rangers go up 3-1, but we go back to Montreal, and wouldn't surprise me we're coming back here for game six.
I'm told again that obviously Carey Price, even if they get to the Stanley Cup final, is going to be a long shot to come back. So yeah. Dustin Tokarski is the guy that they have to ride.
impressive. You're right. The way he started last night looked like he was out of his element, but somehow found a way to stop pucks and then comes up big on Martin St. Louis.
Yeah, it really is amazing, isn't it? I talked to some people in Tampa. I said, okay, I'm reading about, and I remember then hearing about the kid when he was a draft and when he was around, you know, the American League. And I said, so if this guy is such a winner that I hear everybody saying, and it goes from Ray Ferraro all the way through the hockey broadcast group that he's a winner. So I said, why did you trade him for Cedric Desjardins, who's a minor league goalie? And they said, because we didn't think he was an NHL goaltender. That's why we traded him. Well, he looked like one in the third period last night. And then there's some other people saying, well, Boucher wanted him. Or Boucher wanted Cedric Desjardins when he was the coach. So who knows? But, you know, the book is he's 24. He's won. And this kid deserves a ton of credit.
Thanks, Doug. What's on tap for the rest of the day?
Well, I've gone from 39th and 8th down to 69th in Central Park or whatever it is. Now I gotta get my way back, and I'm a little winded, but I may have to walk a little. It's a little bit like a snippet 4 hours in the marathon. This is like a half one for me today.
Are they still talking about Kippy's marathon performance? Like when you run into people in Central Park?
They hardly remember the 52 games he played here.
Thanks for
seeing him on the ice in the ceremony with his suit on. They remember, but it's bizarre though. The number of comments I get last night, I'm wandering around MSG and you must miss Kiprios. I say, well, it's kind of a nice break.
Every now and then, silence is kind of refreshing.
Yes, and I think you're finding that. Yeah, I know you miss me, but you know.
Yeah. Well, that goes without saying. Hey, what's going on with Washington before we let you go? I know you had a conversation with Hazel the other day. I don't know whether that interview ever made it on the air.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. You know what? Nothing's going on with Washington, so I keep hearing that I'm associated with Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah, you and Wayne have become best friends.
I wish I was on his line. When I was playing, if I was with the junior Canadians, I got a chance to meet Gretzky's line mate, I probably would have got a sniff in the American League at least. But you know what? I don't know. I don't think there's anything going on. So it's kind of funny. Everybody's asking me what other. Larry Brooks walked by me yesterday at the morning skate and asked me what I was going to do with Ovechkin. I said, good question, Larry. Like, seriously, you think I would leave Sportsnet to go to the capital of the free world with Wayne Gretzky? Are you out of your mind?
Yes, I do think you would.
In a heartbeat.
Well, Gretzky's apparently out.
Don't mention that to Gord Cutler.
Gretzky's apparently out, so you can't ride his coattails in there. So you're going to have to find a different way.
Funny. Then I read a big article today in the Washington Post saying they've got to get him. They've got to get him. So I don't think there's anything to it. But
you haven't closed the door. You haven't closed the door on the National Hockey League, have you?
Well, do you ever close your door on it? You know,
Gordy did.
I mean, I think, but I wasn't a GM for 3 weeks. I was 9 2/3 years.
Yeah, it was also Toronto. It was a real hockey market, not Columbus and Florida.
That was brutal.
Not those
Doug.
Little ones. Doug. Hey, one guy, I'm with the Padunk Weekly. Can you talk to me for a minute? I came out and there were just banks of cameras and stuff.
Hey, Doug, we're supposed to defend those who are absent. And you're not going to be here the rest of the show, and I'm thinking you're going to get ripped.
Can you tell me what an offside is, coach, please? Whatever. Jeez. Give me a break.
Hey, you realize if the Gretzky thing happened and he went in there as president of hockey operations and you were the general manager, you would be part of the fake GM society.
Yes, and I'm well aware of that. Not, I'd be willing to take the grief over it. At a million years, I'd take all the grief you guys could throw at me.
Would you put it on your business card, fake GM? For seven figures, for sure.
Put it on there. Yeah. Because I was on there before, maybe.
Look, if you get the job, can you get me a signed Ovechkin jersey? Before you piss him off?
You know what? I don't think we have to worry about it. But I could probably help you get a jersey. I got some contacts in Washington when I was assisted there in the late 80s.
Okay. Well, we'll
the security guy's still there.
We'll let you go, and we'll let Gordy get in a couple of shots, I'm sure, and we'll chat.
Take care, guys.
Thanks, Mac. There's Doug McLean making his way on foot through the streets of New York.
What a beauty.
He's in great shape to be able to run while doing an interview and not be out of breath.
Yeah, I know. That's
show some. I kind of thought I heard a Starbucks in there with a couple giggles.
You know, have you ever interviewed his cousin, Rosie Ruiz? Yeah, she was a great runner too, apparently. Yeah. Won the Boston Marathon, allegedly.
Yeah. When we continue. Anything you take from that interview, by the way?
It's like filling time. You know, it's like when you real guest to come to a party and someone comes and's boring the crap out of you for 15 minutes, but you chat.
Well, I still give Montreal more of a shot in this series.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, that one. He's giving them the 3-1 thing. Yeah, I really do.
Based on their level of play so far, are they going to be this bad as a team throughout? I don't think so.
No, I think they have a chance, but it's all about the next game. Game four. If they lose game four, although we've seen the comebacks happen.
Nobody's won at home yet.
It'll take so much energy out of them, and it's a long series if it goes 6 or 7. So right now, they had to throw everything at the New York Rangers last night. They get a day of rest, which is a good thing, and get right back at it.
Mike, I got one quick one. I mean, to be my Leaf historian thing, to go back to 67, which was 30 years before any team
Part of the drinking game, by the way. Every time you compare something to the old Leafs,
well, it's take a shot. 30 years before any team Doug McLean worked for got in the NHL, but they lost the first game in Chicago in the final. And Dave Keon, his line was exactly that line, said, if we play this badly and we only lost whatever it is, we got a hell of a chance, and they won the thing. And that's the same thing for the Montreal Canadiens. You're saying, wow, house money all of a sudden. You know, we're again, look like his Florida Panther team. Just ride the confidence, be loose, and see what happens.
East against West, the WHL versus the QMJHL in the MasterCard Memorial Cup semifinal tonight. We'll chat with Edmonton's head coach about what his team has to do to overcome Val d'Or for a shot at history. It's Hockey Central, presented by Lexus in the Park and the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Another one of those weird nights. Off night in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Chicago and L.A. switching over to the Staples Center. They will play tomorrow. And then it's the New York Rangers and Montreal Canadiens on Sunday. Darren Millard here in the Hockey Central studio. Hockey Central presented by Lexus on the Park with Gord Stellick and Brad May. We're finger cooking lunch today. Get to that in just a moment. But Boston Pizza helping out. Bring that on in just a second. Some free food for you guys coming up after. The MasterCard Memorial Cup slated for a showdown between the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League and the Western Hockey League tonight. The semifinal. No tiebreaker this year as London goes 0-3. How much can you take from one game to the next in a scenario like this? Their last game was against each other, and now you're playing in a semifinal.
Well, and it was in overtime, mm-hmm. and they lost to Val d'Or. On a breakaway, a great stretch pass. You know what? You got to just remember what the game plan was. You actually went out and you lived it for 4 or 5 periods. And you know what? I think you just throw everything else out the window. And Derek Laxall, I will listen to him, but you know, just inspire his team to be better and to have confidence and don't buy into the loss that they had a few nights ago. You guys know how to play hockey. Go play.
You know, I think as well that even when you talk about kids' hockey tournaments, in all honesty, when you play somebody once, it's a help. Like, it really is. Just even so, I think for both teams, it's nice to have that sparring in the first round. Now, part of the challenge is which team makes the most out of, I guess, looking at the strengths and weaknesses of the other team and is able to capitalize on them.
They sound like the most evenly matched teams in this tournament because Guelph went 3-0 and won easily all three games. The closest being by 3 goals, and London went 0-3, these two in overtime. But where a bounce is going to turn the tide in a game, can you glean something off the opposition as a player, not as a coach, but as a player?
Well, you know for sure when you line up at a faceoff, and this is probably the best moment when you're playing. The guys just play, and you react and use your instincts to the best of your ability, and chances are the team that wins does it better. But when you're lining up against a guy, you can see it in his eyes. If he's ready to compete, like if you're Milan Lucic and you're looking at a guy that actually is afraid of you, you sense it, you know it, and you know you have him. And if you run in and you try to make a hit in the corner and the defenseman, you know, fumbles a puck and throws it away with a bad giveaway because he's under pressure, you know you've got him. And so I think the confidence comes that way, and you recognize it at a face-off. But once the puck's actually in play, it's just all instinctual.
Along with Brad May and Gord Stelick, Darren Millard here in Hockey Central, presented by Lex on the Park. Let's bring in the head coach of the Western Hockey League champion Edmonton Oil Kings, Derek Laxdal, who also goes by former Wee King, but we'll let you carry the Edmonton colors right now. Hey, Derek, as a head coach, your last game against Val d'Or, how much do you tweak your lineup or your game plan for tonight compared to what you learned on Tuesday night?
Well, the big thing for us with our lineup here tonight, we'll go with the same lineup that we had, but our game plan will tweak a little bit, obviously to prepare for Bebo a little bit, and obviously for, you know, they had a plan forecheck with some soft chips going back on our defensemen. And, you know, the one thing that we've learned through the last two Memorial Cups we've been in the last 2 years is the style of play has really changed, and we have to adapt a little bit more from a possession game to a little bit more of just an outlet game, getting pucks out of the D zone and pressuring and trying to create some of those turnovers that you just forementioned.
You're playing the Brandon card. I'll play the Leaf card because he went on the Toronto Maple Leaf organization all those years. Derek, so great catching up with you again, and congratulations on all your success. I would think the other part, you're talking the technical side, whoever wins the game, and I know you're hoping it's you, the emotional side is probably one thing the team will have momentum-wise against Guelph, that if you can get there, that's something you got to try to bottle.
Well, it is. You know what? This game's going to be huge. Obviously, it's an elimination game for both teams, and the team that gets through is going to have a little bit of that momentum going into the final. But you saw a really good Guelph team, and they're a good hockey club, but you can force them to defend a little bit, and they will take some penalties. But the one question mark on that hockey club that guys are kind of wondering going into the tournament was Nichols. And I thought he's been one of the best goaltenders. He was outstanding against London. So whoever gets through to that final is going to have a huge task, and you're going to have to rely on a little bit of that momentum from tonight's game.
Hey, Derek, when you know...
Just turn your mic back on.
It is on.
Oh, it just came back on.
It did, yes. I coughed earlier. Derek, when you're actually defending against a team that's going to do soft chips and obviously have an overload coming through the middle trying to chase down those pucks... When you defend it, do you tell your first defenseman who actually retrieves the puck to actually take the contact, or is it as much as changing sides on the puck trying to avoid the forecheck?
Well, it's a little bit of both. The thing for us obviously is to have some back pressure, you know, between the blue line and the red line before you get to that halfway point. And then once they do get that chip in, that offside defense, it's going to have to stagger to a point where he can get back in those pucks. They're obviously trying to keep it away from Tristan Jarry, who's a very good puck handler. And then, you know, we went over some clips last night on different depths of where the puck's being chipped and different options for a hockey club. And, you know, our guys just, we've been through it once in the first game against Val d'Or, so now we'll be a little bit more experienced going back. And the one thing with our hockey club is we really like to be a possession team. We like to use the middle of the ice on our breakouts, but we're being forced into a little bit of different play. And, you know, if you look at the first goal we gave up the other night, we could have pushed the puck up early in the wall. We pushed it back and behind our net, and we weren't willing to use a rim. We wanted to go through the middle of the ice and ended up in our net. So we're going to have to adjust, and we're going to have to get back quicker on pucks to be successful.
Derek Laxdal is with us from the Western Hockey League champion Edmonton Oil Kings in the MasterCard Memorial Cup for the second time in 3 years, looking to advance to the final tonight with a win over the QMJHL title holders, the Val d'Or Forer. Did you have last change on Tuesday?
No, we didn't. They had home ice. We had home ice for the first two games. And okay. They had it on Tuesday, and they've got it again tonight.
So you don't have to adjust in that scenario. When you're trying to match up against Anthony Mantha, you're going into the same type of scenario.
Yes, we are. You know what? They run that line pretty hard. And, you know, we're pretty confident with Dyson Mayo and Cody Corbett, that second pairing. If we get caught against the wrong matchup, we're fine with what we have. But for us, you know, Griffin Reinhardt, I think he played over 35, 40 minutes with a double overtime the other night. So he manages his ice time very well, and he can play those heavy minutes if he has to, you know, do a double shift. But I thought that was a great matchup the other night. I thought Mantha was more physical than you've probably seen him in the tournament. And, you know, I thought the coach said it well. He thought he played a very pro game. And I think tonight you're going to see that same matchup, that same style of game.
Derek, one thing in the bigger picture, I'm curious that it's been a battle to have junior teams succeed in big cities, big markets. And for whatever reason, the Western League has had a good recipe. I know there's been good teams in Vancouver, Calgary, Edmonton by and large, but why is it clicking now where it's been so difficult, say, in Toronto and was difficult out west a couple of decades ago?
Well, you know, the big thing for the we've got a great organization, the Oilers own us, and the staff that we have is just doing an outstanding job of finding that free agent player that can step in the lineup and play, i.e. a Cordy Corbett, Tyler Robinson in their lineup. So with the draft being so young, you've got to find the odd gem. And I think that Randy Hanch and Bob Green have done a great job. And you look at the Portland Winterhawks, the free agent kid that they've brought or have gotten in the late rounds out of the States have just, taken that step. But everybody wanted to be the Kamloops Blazers of the 80s and 90s. Everybody wanted to be the Calgary Hitmen of the 2000s. And just so guys are doing a much better job. And if you look at the coaching ranks in the ball junior leagues, I think the coaching fraternity is outstanding.
Derek, I was at Rexall Place a couple months ago, maybe a month and a half ago, with the Buffalo Sabres. And I saw your players, when you practice in the afternoons, they come in, and obviously there's a ping pong table out in the hallway where the guys are playing. I saw you standing talking to the media. But how much of an advantage do you believe it is that they get to see these NHL players on a daily basis, leaving their locker rooms, whether they're home players or visiting teams, and they have that interaction with the pros, and they're able to watch and learn and be in their presence? Because I believe marinating in that presence is great for development.
Well, I think it's a great advantage to have for young kids coming through. And, everybody wants to play in the National Hockey League. When you see that NHL team every day and you watch their practice habits, and our kids get a chance to watch pregame skates from both NHL teams, and they get a chance to watch the Oilers in the morning, the kids that aren't in school. But, to see what they do every day, and we get a chance to work out in their gym, and they get a chance to interact with the kids and the NHL players that are walking by going from practice. So I think it's huge, especially for the young kids that have an aspiration to play in there. And then for the older kids, like the 18- and 19-year-olds, players like Curtis Lazar and Griffin Reinhardt, they really get a chance to round out who they are as a person and player to make it to the next level, because you can tell them until you're blue in the face, but until they see that, it's going to take these workouts, these extra bike rides, and they see the NHL players doing it, I think it's a huge advantage.
Too bad you changed your number, because I sent you a couple of texts and you never got back to me, so obviously you didn't update me.
Oh, I did.
That.
I had blocked.
Oh, that makes sense.
You're not big in Brandon anymore.
No, I'm really
no one's getting back to you from
I'm
Brandon.
Really struggling with my homies. Good luck. I'm rooting for you, and hopefully that you can get it done.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate the time.
There's Derek Laxdal, head coach of the Edmonton Oil Kings, facing Val d'Or tonight on Sportsnet, the MasterCard Memorial Cup semifinal. The guys, RJ Broadhead, Sam Cosentino, Rob Fald's been working hard along with the panel out there. So two games to go in the major junior hockey season.
Can you give out your text or your email so anybody from Brandon could just text or email you? Because this is
just
pathetic.
Make you feel good.
I mean, Kelly McCrimmon didn't get back to you. Now, Derek, just
we're good
anyone.
Again. I know.
Like Mr. Ziffel or something,
My pops.
Okay, your dad, whatever. I'm worried about you.
Derek Stepan, out indefinitely with a broken jaw. Does that change the series?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Just
that's
part breaking of that's news.
Part of the judgment decision is about the, yeah, absolutely.
Wow. Changes my views, maybe. But still was principal point of contact with was the chest, guys.
Well, it's like if you shoot someone amiss, it's attempted murder. If you kill them, it's murder.
Great analogy.
Thanks.
He can't even eat Boston pizza. The broken jaw. We're finger cooking lunch
more
today.
For us.
We ordered online at bostonpizza.com. Over 100 delivery items to choose from at Boston Pizza. There's a few of them right there if you're watching on Sportsnet. Appreciate Doug McLean and Derek Laxdal joining us today. McLean with a couple of days off in New York City. That's dangerous. Laxdal going back to work tonight. 7 o'clock on Sportsnet. The MasterCard Memorial Cup semifinal. The winner will advance to Sunday's championship game against the Guelph Storm. Enjoy the weekend of hockey. We'll chat with you again on Monday on Hockey Central at noon.